Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Full or part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
All right, the Media Project is underway. We have been enjoying Pete's music, and I hate to interrupt it because we know how much folks like the theme song of the show, but it's time to get down to business. Business, I say. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Ira Fussfeld of the Daily Freeman in Kingston.
Hello.
Sir, how do? And there's Dr. Alan Shartok, columnist, commentator, and the CEO of Northeast Public Radio himself. Sitting over there, wishing to say nothing, of course.
How'd you do?
How'd you do, indeed. We have a couple letters we ought to start off with, because one relates to politics, one relates to the storm that has just passed us over. Which would you like to take up first, politics or the storm?
Aren't they not mutually exclusive?
Well, the storm of politics, that's
no,
true.
No, let's go to the politics first.
The politics
first. That way we can go to the storm, which is going to take up a good deal of time.
All right. So Stephen Glenville says, your newscasts frequently cite polls conducted by Siena. I'm trying to figure out, he says, their bias, and he points out that they didn't have the state controller's race right in 2010. So I'm trying to decide if they have a badly skewed sample, such as that which had Al Landon winning, who remembers that, or if they're trying to scare
Alf.
Reluctant Democrats home. Alf Landon, sorry, right. And, you know, I don't think there is a bias, frankly, in the polling. I'm going to take the stance that I think pollsters, like journalists, seek assiduously to avoid bias. And if there are flaws, it's a methodology as opposed to intent.
Well, you and I have both been down this road and this discussion before, Rexy. And we, I think, pretty well know at least one pollster who once loaded the game. And so I'm not going to name names here, but who did. And now we have the example of the Gallup poll, which is out of sync with almost everything else. I have heard, I can't confirm it, that the senior Gallup in charge now is a conservative individual. And, of course, elections are won or lost based on the idea that you want to be with a winner. So if Gallup has been compromised, and who would know if he is? I mean, I have no idea. I don't know the man. I don't know his politics or the rest of it. But let's just say, if it happened, because he's got Romney winning when nobody else does right now, then that could be a very insidious kind of thing.
Could be.
Yes.
Could be.
If it was.
If it was. But I'm suggesting that I think it's not. I just think that...
Then how can you have all of these other guys saying one thing and then you have Gallup saying something else?
He has a different way of drawing sample points. There is some artistry to polling. It's not pure science. You have to figure out how you're, you know, who are you polling? Who are you looking at?
But once you use the word artistry and not science, you are moving away from, you know, a model. And once you have artistry, then you have the projection mechanism, psychological mechanism, which puts us into the area of what one's natural Weltanschauung, a word I haven't used for a while.
Not since last week.
No.
The show.
When one's worldview sort of takes over. So either consciously or subconsciously, you draw your sample, perhaps confirming your own identity.
Well, I don't pretend to have any expertise in polling.
Then you shouldn't say anything.
No, I would say that what I found interesting in the premise of the letter was the suggestion of bias, and I think it pays to be skeptical about polling. I think it pays to be skeptical about what you read in the newspaper or listen to on the radio, and digest information and make your own judgments ultimately. But the premise of it is biased. It just troubles me. We've talked about it here on this program regarding people feel the media is biased. Why? Because the story, or in this case, the poll, doesn't necessarily reflect your point of view.
Right.
And so the knee-jerk response of many at the extremes now, the extremes at both sides, is it's not that that information is correct, but that the methodology is biased, or that the journalist is biased. And that just throws off the underpinning of the entire landscape of information. If you're just not going to believe anything, then at what point do editors and pollsters just throw up their hands?
Well, why don't you guys just lay off patting each other on the back for 1 minute? And
was that what I was doing?
Yeah. Yes. But I'll do a little poll with you. Okay, ready?
Okay, ready.
Poll.
Ready. Yeah.
Is the New York Post biased in its news columns?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say yes.
That's so true. Okay.
Generally speaking.
Is the New York Times biased in its news columns?
I would say less so.
No, I don't think there's an intentional bias in the Post and not in the Times.
So we have two different answers here. Let's just parse them for a moment. Mm-hmm. Parse is a word I've always loved. Let's parse them for
let's
a moment.
Limb them, you say L-I-M-N.
No. Iris says not as much. So that would indicate, if it's not as much, it would be a 2-to-1 vote right now, because I do believe that, when you hire a Timesman, you hire somebody with a worldview that may be similar to yours and may construct stories the way that, because I read the Times every day. I love the newspaper. And you
like it because it matches your bias.
That's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a confirming bias. Right. Absolutely. But that's a different matter from intentionally distorting the news to match a certain bias, which I think is something that you do see at the Post, and which, by the way, you mentioned the name of the paper. You don't usually do that.
No,
I
take it back, POST.
The far right, having it been ginned up by Fox News, has gone crazy the last few weeks, claiming that the quote-unquote mainstream media has not covered enough and with enough gravity this Benghazi situation. Mm. We're getting it, and I suspect that Rex is on his website, letters and comments. I mean, even on an editorial that had nothing to do with worldview, he's, what about Benghazi? There's that sort of stuff going on.
You mean the ambassador getting killed?
Yes, and Fox News has had a constant drumbeat of it and has made it an issue and has suggested all sorts of malfeasance and negligence on the part of the administration. Now, the New York Times has covered Benghazi. The Times Union has covered Benghazi. The Daily Freeman has covered it. But we have covered it, and in our case, I'm sure Rex didn't have anybody there, so I used AP copy. But we showed a bias, if that's the word you want to use, in saying this is an interesting story, it ought to be reported, but it's not the predominant story of the day, and it should not be covered to the drumbeat that Fox News is giving it. Now, does that mean that we are showing a bias that the right is suggesting? In other words, we have some sort of philosophical bias?
No, it's all propaganda. That's what it is. It's a propaganda technique. You say it over and over and over again, and you hope somebody salutes.
And that's why I say we see that in the Murdoch-owned properties and we don't elsewhere. We had the same thing early in the Obama administration. We suddenly got phone calls from people saying, you need to print a list of the czars. And we said, what? A list of the czars? We didn't understand what they were talking about. And there had been this effort on the part of Fox News to say that the administration was awash in policy czars, a housing czar, a transportation czar, and so on, that was usurping power away from the cabinet. We didn't even know what they were talking about until we understood that this was a Fox News initiative. In fact, there have always been policy coordinators in the White House. Remember, John Ehrlichman was Richard Nixon's domestic policy chief.
Czar.
Czar. But the term czar, which sounds, of course,
Russian,
anti-democratic, small d, was something that was popular on Fox News. And there you see, which is the outlier in media coverage among the mainstream media, which Fox News, of course, is. It's the outlier, and I believe there is intentional bias there.
Okay, let's talk hurricane.
Okay. Well, we got speaking of mail, Jay in Burlington writes saying, funny how a fairly mild hurricane heads for NYC and suddenly it's a superstorm. East Coast media bias? Not saying it wasn't a mess in such a big metro area, but come on, Katrina was a superstorm. This was not. Fact remains, this is on the minor side as far as hurricane goes. It's not the volume of the coverage that bothers me. It's the content of that coverage. Just going wall to wall in the storm with silly reporting isn't going to do a single person a public service.
Guess what?
What?
I think this is one of those letters that if the guy could take it back...
was that letter sent in before the storm or after?
If he could take it back, he would. This is one of the worst tragedies this country has really faced, especially in our industrial, you know, heart. When you see homes burning and, you know, and half of Manhattan underwater or a third of Manhattan underwater and our financial district and many, many lives being lost, this is really something. Now, I think that the story of the week is Obama and Chris Christie. Hmm. And how that is being played. You know, I saw somebody on some terrible television show, I think it was Morning Joe, making the comment that, I think it was the Brzezinski woman, making the comment that we in the media often exacerbate differences between politicians, but we should be doing more to show things like when Chris Christie and the governor and the president got along.
Oh, my.
And I have to say... I happen to think this storm is one of the great intervening variables in the history of American electoral politics. I happen to think the way that it's coming down, it's going to make sure that, and I'm saying this right before an election, mm-hmm. is going to give every possible advantage to the president.
You know, I have to say, I think you're right. And it's interesting. I heard myself saying 10 days ago, you know, I think the Democrats, I guess you're not supposed to quote yourself, but I said, I think the Democrats are waiting for a deus ex machina to come in and rescue their candidate. Sure. You know, that external force that is often talked about in drama. Well, what do you know? Just as though I had asked for it, here is what some would say, the hand of God.
It's scary. and I think I should remind everybody that Rex is the son of a preacher and the brother of a preacher.
Oh, man, I know the Almighty when I see it.
Well, there's two.
You can write to him at Rex Smith. And...
There's two things. Neither of them are really media related, but to Alan's point, we don't know whether or not the devastation is going to impact the ability of people to get to the polls. New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, those are areas that are supposed to be Obama strongholds.
Right,
so we don't know how that's going to play out. But the other thing is, speaking again towards bias, already yesterday as we speak, I was hearing people saying they were mad at Christie. These are partisan Republicans.
Yeah, sure.
They're mad at Christie for the way he has responded so favorably towards Obama. And then the kicker to the comment was, all Obama is doing is being the president. And he's doing his job. And so, you know, they're trying now to downgrade the presidential response as, well, what do you expect? That's what he's supposed to do, as opposed to this is an example of the guy really dropping his campaign and doing what he's supposed to do because
Gail
it's
Collins,
the right thing to do.
Gail Collins' column in the Times referred to Christie on behalf of the Romney team as he whose name must not be spoken. because, of course, he's stepping forward. This is widely seen in political circles as a Christie play for 2016. So.
That's right. And here, because obviously, if Mitt Romney gets elected, then there's 8 years of Romney running. Whether he wins the second term or not, we don't know. But here's Chris Christie getting up, looking at the camera and saying, how dare people, you know, basically question what I'm doing. I have always been my own man. I'm going to be my own man right now. Hugging the president. Walking literally next to the president.
Yeah.
This is a guy who figured in the primary time, well, I don't want to run because it's too early. I just became the governor. But one of the top prospects for the Republicans in the United States of America.
Absolutely.
Now, how, since this is the media project, how the media plays that is everything.
It's really hard, though, because you have to play it straight. You have to report what the president is doing and what the governor is doing. And yes, you leave it to the political commentators to then point out the self-interest of Chris Christie in the re-election of the president, actually, so that he doesn't have Mitt Romney in his way, sort of like pointing out Andrew Cuomo's self-interest in the failure of the two governors, Democratic governors, who preceded him. You know, does this sound familiar?
Yes.
Yes, indeed. And I think that it's fair to say that political observers would agree that Andrew Cuomo was not at all, might have had a bit of a hand in the downfall of his two predecessors.
I would say.
So.
But more than that, I think that Cuomo gets a star for his comments about, you can just see where this is going, and the press has cooperated with global warming. Now, global warming is now going to become a major plank in any future Andrew Cuomo presidential efforts. If Hillary doesn't run, then it becomes that. Now, Cuomo doesn't always do when he becomes governor what he said he was going to do when he was campaigning. You will remember his major plank was he would never allow the legislature to redistrict itself. But then, you know, he sort of made sure that that didn't happen. But I thought that Cuomo was really at the top of his form when he raised the global warming issue.
During the storm itself, broadcast media were on the air. I mean, I think there was a lot of what Brian Lehrer of WNYC referred to as providing comfort to people. I mean, that is really what a media can do in the midst of a storm.
Absolutely. And by the way, can I just interrupt and say that this radio station did exactly that as we speak here. You know, Brian Lehrer may have had some friends, and I love the guy, but we were on the air. We threw everything else away, and we were giving hours and hours of coverage to people who would call in from any one of our affected areas and talk about what they were going through.
Absolutely.
I think terribly important.
Absolutely. It is important because it's basically what's going on in your neighborhood, and it unites people, and it is not only giving people information, it is actually also community building, and I think that's an important part of
And what is adding to that now, and it's not to denigrate Allen Station's efforts, which were tremendous, and I relied on them when I got home in the darkness, but social media, for those who have the ability to get wireless networks during a power outage, you know, the Twitter feeds, etc., providing people information and sharing stories, and it's literally a lifeline. I mean, when you're sitting at home in the dark and there's this storm blowing on outside, you want to hear a voice. You want to know something is going on and that everything is going to be all right, or what the timeline is going to be.
If you can trust it, there's a difference. There was this real scandal during this storm of fake Twitter information, alleging, for example, that there was 3 feet of water on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange, which unfortunately was passed along by two networks without investigation, falsely attributed to the National Weather Service. In fact, it was a Twitter feed from somebody who had never before been publicly identified. Comfortably Smug, at Comfortably Smug was the address, turns out to have been a campaign manager for Christopher White, who is a Republican candidate in New York's 12th congressional district in the U.S. House of Representatives. He subsequently publicly apologized, quit the campaign.
I wonder what the motivation is for that particular transgression.
Absolutely. But fault CNN and the Weather Channel both for passing along this information that they did not know to be true, that came just from a Twitter feed. And this is a hazard that we all confront as we look at Twitter, as we look at social media, and yes, it's valuable to get this information, but you have to be careful because you don't know if it's true.
In the hunt for a scoop. Now, let me say that I relied on the Weather Channel. I watched it during that time. At one point, I started yelling at the announcers because they started trying to make something of the fact that the National Weather Service had not called it a hurricane, but called it something else.
A superstorm. Yeah, it became a superstorm, which it goes back to this first letter. I mean, it was not just a term that the media came up with. This guy is writing, complaining about superstorm. Oh, suddenly it's a superstorm. That, in fact, is what the terminology was.
Well, what bothered me about this and why I yelled at the television screen is I could see what they were doing. They were saying, we hope nobody will not take this seriously because it's not appropriately called a hurricane. It's really a hurricane. And I'm saying, they're just like the tabloids trying to get a leg up on everybody else by manufacturing a false dichotomy here.
What do you mean a false dichotomy? They said it was a terrible storm. They were trying to let people know that there was something.
But they were yelling at the National Weather Service for not calling it a hurricane.
Well, I heard that. I heard somebody interviewed again this morning as we speak, and his point I thought was a good one because by not calling it a hurricane, there were people who were in harm's way who did not think it was going to be as bad as it was.
You would have to be an idiot not watching what they were doing on their own air, showing you where it was, showing the pictures of who was underwater and the rest of it.
Part of our job is to help idiots save themselves.
Why would they not want to say hurricane warning?
So smug, Red.
That's why I'm here. Anyway, this is a correcting tweets, says Tom Phillips of MSN, is like putting toothpaste back in the tube.
Well, actually,
I was sent, one of my colleagues sent me by email, this amazing photograph showing the Statue of Liberty being overwhelmed by a wave. This was right in the middle of the storm. Well, it turned out, of course, that it was a still taken from a movie, one of those fictional end-of-the-world movies.
Oh, boy.
It wasn't true. And fortunately, you know, I wouldn't have used a photograph that just came flying at me.
But the Twitter, if you have followers in Twitter, just like what kind of newspaper or radio station or TV channel you rely on because you trust it, you're going to trust certain Twitter followers more so than others. And so you have to, if you know, if the Times Union tweets something, your presumption based on history is that the Times Union is not going to prematurely tweet something that it does not know is correct, and that you trust that as a source. But if it's Joe Smith tweeting that Statue of Liberty has been blown over, then it's your fault for believing
that. That's exactly right. Yeah. That's an important distinction. Hey, because the campaign is drawing to close, we do need to go back to one political topic here, and that has to do with editorial endorsements. I believe, Ira, your newspaper has endorsed
Obama.
Of the president.
Yes.
So did ours,
yes.
And it's interesting, there's some controversy because there are a half dozen newspapers that endorsed Obama last year that have gone the other way this year, including the Des Moines Register, the Orlando Sentinel, the South Florida Sun Sentinel, and so on. It's creating quite a lot of hullabaloo among editorial writers, as a matter of fact. But it's an interesting thing, the question of what value editorials really bring.
And who's calling the shots? I mean, you know, does somebody get more votes than everybody else on the editorial board? Is the ownership of the newspaper in play here? Are they a bunch of Republicans who are making those choices? Or is it an intellectual, professorial discussion sitting around a table with a bunch of guys in tweed smoking pipes?
Well, I have a theory that I may have expressed the last time this came up a couple of years ago, and I call it my theory of editorial endorsement / movie review / food critic review, which is this. Much like you read in a newspaper a food critic or a movie reviewer, and you find that after you've read the particular critic on a regular basis and then go out and look at the movie or eat at the restaurant, if you find over a period of time that you're in sync with that reviewer, then you're likely to say, oh, this reviewer likes this, I'm going to like it. And I believe that that translates to the editorial page, whether it's endorsements or anything else, where if you really are not sure and you see that the Times Union, which you generally agree with, for any number of reasons, is endorsing Obama, and you're not sure who you're going to vote for, you might say, all right, well, I trust the Times Union.
I agree with you, which is why I think that it's despicable that, you know, the right-wing owners of some of these newspapers have crossed the line in order to get their guy who will give them a tax break
elected. Wait a minute. What makes you say that these people are anything other than sincere? Why do you think that the editorial board of the Des Moines Register
is corrupt? I think they're sincere.
You don't know. I mean, it could be that they genuinely believe that this is the right choice.
But to my point, if you were among the undecided, it's hard to imagine that there are undecideds. If you saw that newspaper did what you allege and that offends you and you realize that and you think that's the reason, then you're not going to follow that endorsement.
Well,
you're going to go
right.
The other way.
Most of us, we talked about this before. I mean, there are a lot of people who have no idea who's running for city council in New York City or those other places and who follow the Times religiously, believe me.
Yeah,
sure. They've told me that.
So on races, I don't think anybody is going to change their vote for the president based upon the Times Union's endorsement. I don't really think we're.
Yeah, you might get one or two,
but we might change somebody's mind in a congressional race that they're.
Oh, sure.
Or we do think we had an impact. I had a candidate who said to me that our endorsement in an assembly primary made the difference in a crowded field with a lot of candidates running.
You may have brought up a point in the presidential election where somebody reading it will say, you know, I hadn't thought of that. I'm going to go the other way. It's probably not many, but it's possible.
Mm-hmm. But I just read a national poll about half the people admit that there is some racial consciousness about Obama running. I found that very dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, what I object to, although it's nothing illegal about it, but your favorite tabloid in New York City ran an entire section, the case against Obama or whatever it is they call it, not just one editorial, an entire section of opinion about that, a pullout section, as if the editorial opinion and their constant drumbeat was not enough. They ran another section just
They're
to amplify
disgusting.
It.
Disgusting.
But they own the press.
They own the press, and
they
play to their base, and they sell newspapers.
You know, you don't have to buy the newspaper, and I would suggest that might be an appropriate response.
Yes.
Or listen to the radio station.
That's right. Well, what do you know? So we've reached about the end of the line here for this week's media project.
Yeah.
You know, we will have to see come next week if we have been at all wise.
Yes, and I think it's important that I point out that I used a WAMC crank radio to help me get through the storm. So
excellent.
And I noticed that you still provide a pledge. You can still get one.
Yeah.
Yes, you can.
Don't know if that'll help you in somewhere else in the country.
Go to WMC.org and just
absolutely
pledge now.
That would be that's a sort of a good way to end the program.
Yep. While they last, actually.
And of course, the head crank runs the station.
There you go. Who are we talking about?
That was unnecessary.
Yes, it was. That was ugly to end the show.
I liked it.
killers playing in fancy. It's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy.